Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 27th of October 2018, Episode 2, Salty Martian Water May Hold Oxygen for Life. Now, Mars has got not hypochlorite, which we actually put in pools. It's got hyperchlorate, and so this has got huge amounts of oxygen in it. Its soil, it's basically one big chlorine oxygen salt bomb. So it's like life there is absolutely full of briny, things that we use as disinfectants to destroy life, destroy lipid layers and all that type of stuff. It's all of Mars, so it's just the biggest hoax I've ever seen. This talking about life on Mars, it's sort of like if I had to have a ball of antiseptic stuff which would be pleased to rub down a surgery with and destroy all life, antibacterial, like detox, the whole thing is Mars. Let's read what this person has to say. Lee Crane, so she won't, whoever she, he or she is, probably won't be that skeptical of it. The atmosphere of Mars may not contain much oxygen, but that doesn't necessarily mean the planet itself lacks the stuff. No, but doesn't contain much anything. A calculation of how much oxygen could be dissolved in the salty Martian groundwater shows that the dusty world may be hiding an abundance of oxygen under the surface, potentially enough to support life. Yes, it may be enough to support life, but the other chemicals would rip it apart. We know Mars has oxygen on its surface. This is why it looks red. Iron in the Martian dust mixes with oxygen to create rust. Well, no, it's not technically rust. Rust is, to be quite honest with you, it's iron oxide powder. But rust itself is an iron hydrate. Okay, it's just... Vala Staminkovic of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California and his colleagues calculated how much oxygen could be dissolved in the brines just under the planet's surface. They found that under particularly cold conditions, certain types of brine could hold just as much oxygen as the seawater on Earth. Now, this would be enough for microbes and even simple animals like sponges to survive the amount of oxygen there is. Of course, not the temperature or anything else like that. We aren't entirely certain where are the liquid brines on Mars, despite clues such as recurring slope increase, dark lines flowing down hills that appear to be liquid. And that is the RSL, the famous things, and there's quite a good animation of these slopes, liquid appearing. There's no definitive proof on which all researchers can agree. Okay. There have been various different claims that we may or may not have seen evidence of these brines existing, says Christine Silbrich of Rice University in Texas. Small amounts of brines would be possible, but we aren't sure where they are. Even if Mars does not have oxygen-rich brine, that's no guarantee of life, says Robin Wadsworth of Harvard University. It's two sides of the coin, in a way. If you want respiration, oxygen's good, but if... too much oxygen can be bad for life, chlorine. Compounds like hydrogen peroxide can damage cells, which may be particularly bad for primitive life forms that don't have many cells to begin with. It's really good. And perchlorate. Australia's Grand Canyon connection. So this would only be... true. This is by Lucas Joel. This would only be relevant if we found strata which was similar. Okay, so the Grand Canyon's a huge dig. It's a many. So life is, I think, begins 550 million years ago, and it goes way beyond the. This is not life. This is complex cellular life. Sounds multicellular life. 550 million years. So it goes deeper than that. So the Grand Canyon, Arizona, has a bizarre Apidean link. Apidean means underneath on the south side. A chunk of rock sequence that have been sliced through to form a natural wonder of the world now sits kilometres away in Tasmania, Australia. Let's get with this. A chunk of rock sequence. Okay. To peer into the Grand Canyon is to behold in rock layers a record of the Earth's distant past. Well, it is actually a record. The oldest layers at the bottom date back more than 1.5 billion years. That's a fair amount of time. It is some of the most ancient layers of the sequence interests Jack Muller, the geologist at Australia's Monash University. He thinks these rocks, which are between 1.1 and 1.2 billion years old, which looks just like similarly ancient rocks in Tasmania. Tasmanian rocks in question have always seemed a bit out of place, he says. Quote, they didn't look a lot like similarly aged rocks nearby. Muller and his colleagues have now found that the rocks contain a mineral with the same geochemical fingerprint as those in the Grand Canyon. Well, that would be interesting. That would be a clincher. We concluded that although it's now on the opposite side of the planet, Tasmania must have been attached to the Western United States. Well, that's bizarre. I just can't mentally picture that, how West. Yeah, I can sort of see. Beyond extending the Grand Canyon's reach across the Pacific into the North of the Hemisphere, United Tasmania rocks with those in North America helps to solve an ancient geological jigsaw puzzle. About a billion years ago, all Earth's continental plates formed a single supercontinent called Roninda, but working out exactly how today's continents would have once fitted together to form Roninda is no simple task. Given how long it existed, the Tasmanian discovery provides a clue, because it's clear evidence that North America and Australia were linked together at the time. Jack's paper showed Tasmania holds the key to tying together the tectonic geography of the time, says Alan Collins, the University of Adelaide, Australia. Quote, it's a really good link and tie that allows us to build a full plate models of the ancient Earth. Well, no, but, well, I think we need partial plate models, but I don't know. You need probably a few more strands of evidence before you went off here. A bit to explain radio bursts from space. So what's been happening is we've been listening to space, and there's a few milliseconds absolutely bumper bursts come into radio telescopes. Now we've seen it because we've actually increased our spatial sensitivity to do Fourier analysis to get virtually large space telescopes, or to radio telescopes. So this is where we're going into. And it looks at here, oh dear, it's, yes, he's got, what is it, seven things that it could be, and the last one is weird stuff. Okay, let's do it by Chelsea White. Strange flashes of radio waves have been a mystery ever since we first one was detected in 2007. It's tough to say what's causing these fast radio bursts, FRBs, because most are here and gone in just a moment. Only one has ever been seen to repeat, which makes it tricky to gather much data about them. They have to be very short as repeating. I don't know how they do that. The project, but astronomers do have ideas about where they might come from, ranging from mundane to the exotic, such as alien craft powered by beams of light. Okay. Where they may come, I think they know they come from outer space. It's what may be causing them. A project now aims to gather all the most likely explanations and whittle them down. Quote, when we started the catalogue at the beginning of the year, we had more theories than we had observations. But now we have more observations, says Elmer Platts of the University of Cape Town in South Africa. Platts and her colleagues have grouped the explanations in the following seven categories. Okay, well, there you go. Smash-ups. Merging between two large astronomical order objects would cause radio waves. For instance, when a magnetic field of a super-dense neutron star meets a magnetostar? Okay. Or a supernova ejecting mass, or even a black hole. The fields might create streams of particles which result in radio waves. The same thing would occur if two neutron stars collided, or a black hole, or collided with another black hole. Yeah, the whole thing is that, yeah, you've got causality. Yeah, how does the big thing is, how does it work? Is it that there is something which is really compressing and expanding time, and so we're seeing these extremely compressed by, you know, we're seeing some sort of time lensing? I just, it's just really hard to, The problem is that a millisecond, you know, light, well, light travels 300,000 kilometers per second. A millisecond is, it's not very big in terms of astronomical terms, a millisecond for it altogether. Collapses. As large celestial objects collapse, the radiation can escape from the radio waves. You really want it bottled and then snap and release is what I think. Okay. A FRB would be a result of a neutron star collapsing into a black hole or quark star. Now, quark star, I don't know, I don't think anyone really believes in quark stars, that this is, so there's three quarks in a neutron or a proton, and this is not made out of hadrons, it's made out of quarks. I don't know. Oh, yeah, there we go. Hypothetical stars, such as high pressure and temperature, that are subatomic quarks, are stripped from the neutrons that make up the matter. Some ideas suggest dark matter, the mysterious substance that makes up 85% of matter in the universe, it could be sucked into a neutron star and cause a collapse that would spew FRBs. Giant bubbles and pulses. Rapidly rotating pulses have been suggested as FRB source because their magnetic fields could accelerate clumps of particles that give off radio waves. A pulsar in a cloud of dust would create a wind bubble as it spins, triggering an FRB that travels through the nebula. It sits inside. That's all okay. It's just how do you get something if it takes a milli, you know, it takes a second to get to Earth, to the moon. It takes sort of a millisecond. It just hurts my head to think. These pulses are incredibly short, less than milliseconds and stuff like that. Active galactic nuclei. When an enormous black hole sits in the center of a galaxy, gobbling up dust, some of the matter can gain strain due to extreme physical conditions and shoot out a jet just before it's swallowed. These jets shine brightly under the forces of heat and friction, shooting out from the active galactic nuclei, AGN. Some of the ideas about the origins of FRBs suggest that objects or particles may be interacting with AGN, active galactic nucleus, to produce characteristic radio waves. Sorry, again, that's just weird. Close encounters. A pulsar traversing an asteroid belt could strip away charged particles from the asteroid's surface and produce radio waves characteristic of the FBR. That's possibly plausible. Or a comet captured by a neutron star could break apart and emit radio waves that's sucked into the star. Axions. Axion, I think, what's that from? Dark matter, I think. Okay, one candidate is, axion interactions. One candidate for dark matter is the hypothetical subatomic particle called the axion. Groups of these could clump up and collapse or collide with a highly magnetized object, such as a black hole or a neutron star. The resulting interaction could produce FRBs. They could. But from the stuff I've seen, they've got no interaction with normal matter whatsoever. Weird stuff. Maybe FRBs are created by exploding white holes, mirror opposite to black holes that spew matter instead of sucking it in. Or maybe they come from lightning produced on the surface of pulsar. String theory suggests FRBs could occur when the cosmic strings they supposedly make up our universe, oscillate, or collide. Oh, I think that's probably a likelihood. Okay. Some of these theories are more likely than others, says Shish Tendulkar at McGill University in Canada, who works on the project. That's why we're set up with a discussion board so scientists can discuss the pros and cons of all the theories. But for these ideas to be correct, it has to be able to account for several oddities amongst the 60 or so FRBs so far. The record signals of all have high frequency, suggesting they come from something compact. Yeah, I would have to say that they do have high frequencies, and Okay. But they have little else in common. Some FOBs emit polarized light, while others don't, for instance. What's more, we have only been able to pin down a few FOBs to their home galaxy. So we're aren't even sure if certain environments produce FOBs more often than others. Oh, I think that's just something that really requires more data to come in. Sorry for yawning. This is cognitive rehab. The sort of brain is doing extra work, and I just ran out of energy. We've done 15 minutes. Who calls for the end of virginity testing? Okay, Deborah McKenzie. Doctors, police and employers should be banned from using so-called virginity tests on women and girls. And those who continue to use them should be prosecuted. The World Health Organization has declared, have they? Such tests are used around the world in rape investigations and even in hiring women in certain professions. The WHO is calling on governments to ban these practices and to educate doctors, police and others that the tests don't indicate past sexual activity. For centuries, many people have believed that the hymen, a fringe of tissue inside most vaginas, can be used as a sign of virginity, but there is no evidence that the hymen can reveal if a woman has had sex. As underscored by a review of the available research co-authored by the WHO's Claudia Grasso-Monero this year. In one study, the doctors found that the differences between hymens of women who had or hadn't had penetrative intercourse were insignificant. Another study found that the hymen inspection accurately identified less than 10... accurately identified less than 10% of women who had experienced penetration. Yet, in Indonesia, a woman wanting to join the military must have a vaginal hymen. Virginity tests are also used to humiliate women in prison, including demonstrations in Egypt's 2011 Arab Spring. In South Africa, girls who fail virginity tests may be ostracized, and some employers have held policies of only hiring women who pass. Can you imagine that in your paper, your LinkedIn profile? Women who fail virginity tests, regardless of whether they ever had sex, suffer socially and psychologically, says WHO. Some attempted suicide, others killed by their families. Okay. I'm not getting any suicide. I know I get killed by my family. Virginity tests don't stop at the hymen. What? Okay. In rape cases in India and neighbouring countries, medical police examiners insert two fingers into the vagina to assess the laxity of vaginal muscles through the thought to reflect whether the woman has become habituated to sex. But vaginal muscles tone reflects no such thing, says WHO. Okay. Nevertheless, in court, diagnosis of past sexual activity can weigh against an unmarried woman who has been raped. Ara Kashyap of Human Rights Watch says doctors in India obsess about vaginal evidence, even though rape often leaves no vaginal injuries. India's most recent guidelines on how to treat women who report being raped no longer includes the two-finger test, quote-unquote. But the guidelines have only been adopted in 9 of India's 36 states and territories. Oh, my God. So that's subtract 9 from that. That's 27. A lot needs to be done, says Ketchup. While virginity tests are most common in parts of Africa and Middle East and Asia, the WHO says they also occur in immigrant communities in rich nations, including the UK. God. Machines make the next Super Mario. Oh no, this is going to be AI makes them a game. Oh dear. Your plucky blue box bounds over gaps and hops onto platforms. Shouldn't say there's some sort of insect snake crawling around. It's an Australian wood pigeon. Now, here, these are pigeons unlike you've ever seen before. These all have, look, they've got this beautiful sort of steely pink metallic shine to some of their feathers, and they have a little upward feather. Okay, but let's get back to your plucky blue box bounds over gaps and hobs. blue box. Your blue box bounds over gaps and hops onto platforms. The pulsating red wall never more than half a screen behind. If it catches you, the game's over. When the wall falls, the default falls into a hole. You bounce on it again and it's gone. This is Super Mario reimagined by artificial intelligence. Matthew Gazelov and Mark Rea of the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta have created a machine learning system that has taught itself the basics of video game design by watching videos of people playing classic games such as Super Mario, Kirby, and Mega Man. Watching people? This is bizarre. Yep, okay, I have to stop now.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.